I'm very happy now to welcome back to the program Janet Davidson. She is director of the play Love, Loss, and What I Wore, a tribute to Nora Ephron, which opens this Saturday, the 22nd of September, at the Santa Fe Playhouse. And Elena Zachary, who is one of the actors in this play. Welcome, ladies, to the Radio Cafe.
Hi, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you. Good morning.
So Nora Ephron and her, I guess her sister Delia Ephron, based on the book by Eileen Beckerman, and Nora Ephron, famous for writing Meg Ryan movies and other movies like Sleepless in Seattle and When Harry Met Sally and things like that. And this is really a play about clothing.
It's about our emotional connection, I think, to clothing.
I actually think they're life stories that are just brought to the stage by references to clothing or articles of accessories, or it's an accessory, a handbag or something like that. But I really think they're life stories.
And so you've got five women on stage acting different parts, and the structure of it, not the content, but the way it was performed reminded me kind of the vagina monologues, because different actors play completely different parts in the play, and some of them are dialogues with each other and a lot of them are monologues. And now, are these all taken from true stories? Did Eileen Beckerman go and collect stories from various American women about their relationship to clothing?
It was, as I understand it, it was largely about her life, and then it was exploded by the Ephron sisters. I saw interviews with Delia and Nora talking about their mother, who was a writer, and influenced them greatly about what they wore. So the stories are enhanced by the Ephron sisters' own direct experience as well.
Right.
And that's why when we do the show, and prior to the show, we're asking Santa Fe women and men to write up a little tiny story about something that they remember in their life and drop it off at the Playhouse or send it to the Playhouse email or bring it to the show, even better. And we'll read one each night from the stage about our local people, and then we'll save them, because who knows, we might end up doing Santa Fe, Love, Loss, and What I Wore.
And Janet has asked her actors as well to each write one short reminiscence about a very important article of clothing that we will end the reading with.
Right. Yeah, or about the point in the life and what the clothing meant, because I know each one of us has taken some really important, or almost maybe sometimes not important, but boy, it's stuck. I know Debriana's, I think hers is going to be pretty funny because it really stuck in her life.
And what's marvelous in talking about this project, Love, Loss, and What I Wore, is the conversations that it engenders among women. If we say, for a woman, do you remember getting your first bra? Everybody immediately zeroes in on that experience, for good or for ill. And that's part of the charm, I think, and in some cases, real poignancy about these stories that are narrated, you know, through the play.
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the monologues is about, and it's one of the funniest ones, I think, is about women's purses. And when I was with Stu yesterday on the radio on KSFR, without even knowing that there was something in there about purses, he said, oh boy, the one thing, because he said, is there anything here for men? He said, can I learn something about my wife? He said, the one thing I won't touch is her purse. I won't go in there. It's a landmine in there. So I think a lot of men know that. I've had men, when I've said, would you go into my purse and get my wallet? And they hand me the whole purse because they do not want to go into my purse.
Well, there are, how should we say this on the radio? There are sort of supposedly Freudian implications of purses, and opening a purse is like a sexual opening.
Oh!
And, yeah, and I think if you think about it, and if you think about the different kinds of, look at what purse you have, and look at the purses of your friends, and how big and small they are, and whether they're neatly organized or not. And they actually do say a lot about a person.
We could talk about the purses that Janet and I have brought to this interview, and whatever purse you have, they're emblematic, I think, of who we are right at this moment.
Right.
I know. I have a smaller purse, and I can't get enough into it. I have a bigger purse, and I can't find anything. And that's what this wonderful monologue goes on about. And no matter what you do, it's not quite right.
And this is the thing. I watched the rehearsal of this, and I thought, do American women really, are we really that shallow? Do we really put that much of our emotional energy and our sense of self-esteem into our clothing and into what that clothing means. And I found it kind of, I was a little bit depressed about that.
But see, now I have a different perspective because I'm looking at the emotional content. You know, I can look at certain moments in my life, the way Janet's, you know, having us focus, or I could look at certain articles of clothing that come up that have tremendous emotional content. The selection of the dress for my mother's passing, my mother's funeral. A very romantic night in Negril, Jamaica in 1982. I remember exactly what I wore. So to me, that is the fun of these explorations, you know, these monologues and these dialogues. It's the emotional content that really makes it sing for me.
I also think it's a wonderful leaping point for discussion, because I think that's what's so fascinating, is that right here this morning we've had an off-air wonderful discussion about our lives and the various things we think about our bodies and how people's reactions to our bodies and to maybe what we wore or clothed it or whatever. I find clothing can be enormously creative and really can say something about who we are. I mean, I was saying before is that I have walls in my house, and those walls are perfectly sturdy and perfectly fine, but I have artwork up on the walls because I enjoy it. I enjoy the creativity, and I enjoy looking at it. And sometimes when I've got an outfit on that just makes me feel good, it's comfortable and it makes me feel good, and people will stop me and say, oh, you look so pretty. And it may not be the outfit that's pretty, but I just feel good in it, so I kind of glow a little more. And I think that's a lot of what clothing can do when we think of it as creativity. And I think that's what's exciting about it. And I think the conversation that it evokes. There's a whole little piece about shoes and about the Birkenstocks, how the girl goes from high heels to Birkenstocks and then eventually back to high heels again.
And I get home from an event where I've dressed up and I look nice, and I can't wait to get out of it.
Oh, I think we all can't wait to get out of it. And I don't think we stand at home. But that moment in time when you just feel good, you know, I don't know. That first sip of wine is pretty good. Maybe the third one is too much.
I was thinking that, you know, as I began to prepare working with Janet on this, so many memories started to surface about articles of clothing that were so important. And, of course, I wouldn't have thought about them had I not been preparing the script for Janet. And one of the pieces that I'm hoping that I'll be able to contribute, when I was in sixth grade, I wanted nothing more than to be an ice skating star. I was in love with Sonia Henie movies and ice capades, and we had a pond behind the house. I spent every possible free moment skating, and I had dreams about seeing myself as a little skating star. Now, bear in mind, I was built like a turnip, and I was also small. There was no hope for this. And still in all, my family...
What are turnips built like?
Well, they're not long. You don't think of turnips as long and lean. If I say a fire plug, maybe that's a more apt analogy. That was my body type when I was in sixth grade. But our family joined the Cleveland Arena, and I got to take skating lessons. And I fulfilled a lifelong dream, lifelong up to sixth grade, getting to be in the year-end ice skating show. And my mother had to make the costume because all the moms did. I was a skating mushroom. Okay, was it glamorous? You betcha. And that, you know, that yellow flannel spangled onesie with a coolie hat was my ice skating debut outfit. Who could ever forget a moment like that?
I think one of the things that probably Alana and I grew up differently with is the fact that our mothers sewed. I know my mother sewed. And in those days,
a lot of mothers
made their own clothing. Mm-hmm. My first real wonderful interaction with my mom in a lot of ways was making doll clothes with her. And I had these dolls, and we would make the doll clothes together. I still have a bunch of doll clothes because little girls love dressing their dolls up. And that's a missing element. My mother used to make her clothes, and we were talking yesterday, I think, about the fact that it's really clothes can be so cheap now that it's almost not something you want to sit at home and make anymore.
Well, it actually costs more to go to the fabric store and buy a pattern, thread, zippers, mm-hmm. buttons, and fabric than it does to go buy clothing, which is often petroleum-based and sweatshop-made.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But that relationship between the mother and the daughter of of sitting around after school and kind of putting those things together is something I cherish. I remember it and I cherish it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm not so sure that that exists the same way anymore.
My character that I principally play, Gingy, talks a lot about that. Her mother made most of her clothing, and it was economic. And she said, they were wonderful and I love them. I really longed for a store-bought outfit. So she talks a little bit about an important store-bought outfit. It's a culture, and things have changed. My mother also, we all grew up learning how to sew. Yeah. We made Ginny Doll. Do you remember Ginny Doll?
I have them at home still.
And I would buy doll pat. Well, it's because we're older than you are, Mary Shelley. But I bought patterns to make doll clothes. If I had remnants, I mean, it was a thing of the times that you did.
Mm-hmm. It was just as if you came home and you drew and you made artwork, you put that together. It'd be like you put something in, you put a little skirt on the... No, that doesn't work, and then you put something in. It was a form of creativity that was really kind of wonderful.
We're talking about the play Love, Loss, and What I Wore. It's a tribute to Nora Ephron, and one of the things that you're doing is collecting articles of clothing for Esperanza Shelter.
We thought it would be a great idea because as Americans we all have so much more than we need, that if we brought in outfits to contribute, wouldn't that be a wonderful way of acknowledging the generosity that we have, and also that, to me, that emotional connection we have to outfits to help somebody else out of our surplus, out of our excess.
Yes, and I know my friend who's a costume designer in Los Angeles was very involved with Dress for Success, where they brought very specific things for women who were ready to re-enter the workforce and send them off. And it just, she said you could see the difference when they put a suit on that really fit well, that they could go into an interview with that, and they felt so much more confident because their lives had been totally shaken, and is the same as the women and the families that are in Esperanza. Their lives are uprooted, and sometimes they come with nothing. So if we can put something on them that isn't just a hand-me-down kind of thing, but a nice outfit, something that really, okay, I feel good in this.
Now, you've got some wonderful cast members. Besides Elena Zachary, there's Sheridan Johnson, Jenny Gabriel, Joya Berlin, and Debriana Mancini. And it's a very, very strong cast.
It's a wonderful cast. I feel totally blessed. You know, I could visualize this. I knew who I wanted. And although Sheridan is new to me, and I thank Elena for that.
She was in Midsummer Night's Dream.
She was in Midsummer Night's Dream, yeah. She is someone to watch. She's electrifying on stage.
But my chance to work with the others again, and quite a lot of them, both Jenny and Debriana, are very film people. And since my whole career has really been in film, since I gave up stage years ago, It's fun to work with them again. It really is. I'm having a ball. They're so good. Sometimes I forget to write notes down. I'm like just watching them, and I had a note there. What was it? I don't remember.
You know, and as an actor, it's so much fun for me because we've got this great span of ages, and it's like a hen party when we get together because we keep having these conversations, and I also marvel at the gifts of these women bringing to bear on these fantastic monologues.
Yes, and although it's a staged reading, I'm trying to put some little things into it that are a little more than just reading your script, and many are not going to be just reading.
But
also,
we need to have people understand it has always been a stage reading. When it ran off Broadway for all those years, there were women sitting behind music stands, and that's what they did. So it's not a play in that sense.
Do they change their clothes?
No. No. What we're going to do a little bit of that, but we're not changing. We'll just have a reveal in the end. It's actually the reason I found this play is that I was looking at, and I saw the title, and then I realized that Tyne Daly had opened in it, and I think she came back to close it, and she played it in Los Angeles too. And so that somehow, even though I didn't know Nora Ephron, I probably was in the same room with her at some point in my career. That would be 800 people and I. But Tyne was the first major actress I directed in Los Angeles, and she just happened to be one of the last ones I directed before I came here. So I felt that there was a one degree of separation there, and I really wanted to do that. I wanted to honor a woman, Nora Ephron, who has done an enormous amount for women in the film industry by just being consistently good. You may not love what she did, but the bottom line is her films, both the ones she directed and the ones she wrote, in terms of Hollywood, they're huge grocers.
And you've got Mail, Julie and Julia, yes. Sleepless in Seattle, When Harry Met Sally, Silkwood.
Heartburn. I mean, these are...
Bewitched.
Big money makers.
Yeah.
And that's the way Hollywood equates success. That's the bottom line for them. And women don't usually get into that category. So the fact that Nora was consistently in that category... I don't want to give her a tribute because she was a moneymaker, but I want to give her a tribute for how dedicated she was to keep putting things in front of us that were so relatable on the human level. I mean, her book of I Hate My Neck, I got to tell you, there's a lot of women out there that hate their necks.
And also the play that she wrote with Delia, How to Eat Like a Child. She told women's stories, you know, many different women, many different stories, and continues, obviously, to live through her films and through Love, Loss, and What I Wore.
Love, Loss, and What I Wore opens this Saturday, September 22nd at 7:30 at the Santa Fe Playhouse, and it's also Sunday at 4 o'clock, Sunday the 23rd of September. There's a suggested donation. You can call 988-4262 for reservations. You can also write to Playhouse at santafeplayhouse.org. Janet Davidson is the director, and Elena Warren Zachary is one of the actors in Love, Loss, and What I Wore, a tribute to Nora Ephron. Thank you so much, ladies, for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you.